Angie's List is now Angie, the nation's largest home services marketplace. And Angie is here to help homeowners get all their jobs done well. Angie has helped over 150 million homeowners care for their homes. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, come to Angie to connect with and hire skilled professionals to get the job done well. My son needed a major yard cleanup at his new home. We went straight to the Angie website and found a bunch of local, reliable, and affordable pros to handle the job, and one did pronto. Angie can help you find the best price for your project. Angie lets you request and compare quotes from multiple pros in just a few taps, or book services at an upfront price based on local data. Angie has cost guides that tell you what others have paid for similar projects, both nationally and in your area. Get started at Angie.com. That's ANGI.com, or download the app today. The app and website are free to use.
Hello and welcome to the Victor Davis Hanson Show. Victor is the Martin and Neely Anderson Senior Fellow in Military History and Classics at the Hoover Institution, the Wayne and Marsha Buskey Distinguished Fellow in History at Hillsdale College. We are on the weekend edition, and we've got lots to talk about on the Trump trials. So stay with us, and we'll be right back.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Welcome back. Victor, before we go to the Trump trials, I would like to remind your audience that you interviewed Jeremy Carl this week, and it's available for our Wednesday podcast. And I was wondering, could you let us know a little bit about what that was? I think it was a great podcast.
Yeah, Jeremy Carl has a brand new book called The Unprotected Class about how anti-white racism is tearing America apart. And I've known Jeremy a long time, and you think the stereotype author would be some right-wing zealot, tribalist. He's not. He's a Yale graduate. He is a Stanford graduate. He has a grant, and he worked at the Hoover Institute. He's very calm. He's reasoned. The book is heavily footnoted. And the argument is that it's a very strange argument. It's not just that there's hatred of so-called white people, and there's no reciprocity. In other words, if you just took the word white and plugged in Latino or black, what people say, you'd be in trouble. But he makes some very unique points that when people say that the Native American population is growing, or it's this percentage, or the black population has gone from 11 to 12, 13, what he's trying to show you is that people of mixed heritage, like Obama, for example, but even with less African-American lineage, are now rejecting their so-called white personas. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And because they feel just like during racist day, to say you were black was a roadblock to advancement, given the racist nature, say, of the South. Well, now, if saying you're white, is you don't get anything for it. So he has arguments that, like that, and he looks at Hollywood, the entertainment industry, climate change. And what he comes up with is that it's very dangerous how loose and sloppy everything. It reminded me of Carthago Delenda Est. Every time the elder Cato wanted to finish a speech, he said, "Carthago Delenda Est, Carthage must be destroyed so they could get a third Punic War. Well, this hate white people. You go on The View, and after I was listening, after I read the book, I went on DirecTV, and I think I mentioned that before. I just looked at the you know, that poor white boy, white men can't jump.
Oh,
white,
yeah.
All these
that's
movie
all these
titles.
Movies. Yeah.
And then he... It, when you look at commercials, it's reverse racism. The white guy is step and fetch it from the old black racist days where they made fun of African Americans. Now, you look at a commercial and there's a young sort of hip educated black guy, and then there's, you should get this type of insurance, and then you show this sort of sloppy white guy, well thank you, I didn't know, and the black guy instructs him, right? And it's all stereotyped. And it's insidious. And of course, it's all based on, as he points out, this fallacy that if you're 67% of the population, therefore you can't be victims of racism. And people who are supposedly oppressed and victimized can't be oppressors and victimizers. Well, it's a wonderful book. And he has a great deal about reparations. It's very relevant to California, a state that was, as I said earlier, never a slave state. Very small African-American population, 75 billion in the whole, and seriously, because of this buffoonish governor talking about reparations without any criteria. They don't know how to... If you're Jamaica and you came this year, I guess you get reparations. I don't know. I guess if your parents were killed on the northern side, your great-grandparents died at Shiloh fighting for the North, you get reparations.
Crazy.
It is. So it's a great book. I urge you all to get it. And then, of course, my own book comes out Tuesday, May 7th, The End of Everything. That was a, you know, we've talked about it. We're going through the chapters on our other podcast, but I had these incidents in history where the loser was not just defeated or surrendered or even massacred by Attila or Tamerlane or Genghis Khan, but completely scientifically, deliberately destroyed. I mean, language, civilization, religion, gone, and never come back. And I took four examples, Thebes, Carthage, Constantinople, and the Aztecs. And then I had an epilogue, but as I finished it, there was all this contemporary, from the river to the sea, destroy utterly the Jewish nation. And in the epilogue, I talk about that. I thought it would be kind of esoteric to quote what the Iranians said they're going to do, or what Erdogan said he's going to do the Armenians, or what Putin says he's doing the Ukrainians, or what the Chinese say they're going to do too. And we all, but it was eerie how I looked at the responses to it. It was just like the people on the walls of Constantinople saying, I don't think Mehmet's going to attack. Why would he want to take Constantinople or the Carthage? Well, we gave him the elephants, we gave him the catapults, we gave him the shields, we gave him the spears, we gave them all our weapons. That's enough. They're not going to tear it. It's that denial, that naivete, and everybody dismisses all this. And I don't think it's, after what we saw with COVID, with these people flat out lying that they had subsidized gain-of-function research at a biolab and under the control of the Communist Party military, the People's Liberation Army, anything is possible.
Yeah.
And so it's scary times when you hear people talking in eliminationist fashion.
Yeah, eliminating Western culture. That's a common theme in
nations,
universities.
Especially nations that are, as I've said, I try to argue in the book, especially nations like Israel that only have 11 million people and they're in this terrible neighborhood with 500 million Muslims around them, or Greece that's only got about 10 million people with this huge, you know, country 50,000 square miles, and it's facing the Ottomans. And I don't say that in deprecatory fashion. That's what Mr. Erdogan says he is now, a new Ottoman power.
Yeah.
Given what Turkey has done, or the Ottomans did in the past, to Greeks, to Armenians, to Kurds.
All right, Victor, let's go ahead and then turn to these Trump trials. We've had some new developments this week. One is that Judge Mershon has threatened Trump with jail for violating a gag order, and he's fined him $9,000 for each of 9 offenses for social media posts. And I was wondering your thoughts on it. And he said that jail may be necessary for Trump.
Yeah, I think his view is it's not a matter of if, it's when I'm going to be reversed, but I'm going to go down in history of getting this SOB Trump And if I can run this trial right and get him in jail and gag him and he loses the election, I'm going to be iconic. I'm going to be famous. Because otherwise, I'm going to be humiliated because I gave to the Biden campaign. My daughter's making millions of dollars by winking and nodding that her dad's the judge, and she's working for all these Democratic candidates. She's made, I think, $90 million. He should have recused himself. He's got the lead prosecution witness, Michael Cohen, who is a convicted liar, who is going on TikTok and social media begging for money as he attacks Donald Trump publicly. Usually when you have gag orders, if you look at it, I know that my mom was a superior and appellate court judge, but she was a trial judge. And usually when you have them, the gag order is to prevent attacks, physical attacks, you know, you to try to get people to go after a judge or a DA. You say, you're not going to talk that. I for gang members especially. If a gang member says, oh, you do this to me, wait till I see you. And they've tried to say that about Trump, but they haven't been successful. But they're gagging him in reply to what people are talking about. So the rule is that you can trash Trump if you're a particular person, like Alvin Bragg. You can run for Manhattan District Attorney by trashing Trump. You can raise money by trashing Trump. You can trash him every day if you're Michael Cohen, but you can't respond to any of those, that disinformation.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to work. And then, of course, all of these things should have never come to the light of day. They were all misdemeanors that were way beyond the statute of limitations. So then he just said, I'm basically a federal prosecutor. I never knew I was, but I'm going to prosecute him because this non-disclosure agreement, it was a campaign finance donation. And the question is, if he has a legal non-disclosure and you have to put it, how do you explain it? So he said it was legal expenses, right?
Yeah, sure.
But what if he had said campaign donation?
They would have gotten
him
coming
got
or
him there
going,
and he
yeah.
said, no, you're trying to hide it.
Yeah.
And so he can't win no matter what they do. And the thing was, when you read the indictment, I looked out online, there's no mention of a crime.
Yeah, everybody's wondering.
They don't tell you what is the thing he did. It's basically, I'm going to put him on the stand and I'm going to tell the world that he had sex with a porn star. And he had this rag call of the National Enquirer. I'm going to get all this gossip and dirt. I'm going to ruin again. I'm going to open a wound with his wife. I'm going to get every sordid thing out there. That's what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to get him out off the campaign trail for 3 weeks.
And maybe get him in jail for a little bit.
And get him in jail. The problem he has is that the American people are looking at this and they see two things. They see three things. Number one, they see the split screens we've talked about. Joe Biden, glitzy, raising $26 million. Joe Biden White House dinner with repulsive Robert De Niro and Jeff Bezos. Joe Biden with all these elite people. And then Trump at Chick-fil-A, Trump at the bodega. And Trump has turned this into a... Remember the Frank Capra movie, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington?
Yes.
Where you have Jimmy Stewart as a young idealist. I mean, everybody's Victor. Trump is not Jimmy Stewart. I'm not saying he is. But that corrupt Claude Rains, remember him? He's that senator and he kind of has a heart. I can't do it anymore. I've been so unfair and crooked to Jimmy Stewart. Mr. Smith, well, it's Mr. Trump goes to New York. And he goes there and he falls asleep. And they, you know, he sleeps 4 hours, I hear. So he's sleeping, and then they do everything they can. And they get more outrageous and more outrageous. And Mr. Trump goes to New York. And then he goes around New York, just like Jimmy Stewart did in the movie, Frank Capra, looks at the monuments, and he sees everything. And the more that they do this to him, the more popular Trump becomes.
Yeah, it seems like. Well, since we're speaking about that, let's just take a moment to look at the swing state polls. In Arizona, Trump is up by 4, Georgia by 3, Michigan only by 1, but that's still significant, and Pennsylvania and Wisconsin by 2, and North Carolina by 5, and I was wondering your reflections on these polls.
Where is the View people, Whoopi Goldberg and Sonny Hostin, where is his white privilege, Donald Trump? I was told that you have white privilege and you're exempt. He's whiter than anybody. He's pale. and he has no privilege. It's why doesn't he say, I'm white. I have white rage. I have white supremacy. I have white privilege. This shows you how stupid it is. And they're it's just absurd.
Very antithesis of that. That's why.
And so he goes up, and why is, so your question is, why is, remember the giant, I heard all of the end of February, there's a Biden bump. And I would turn on MSNBC, CNN, just to see what they were saying. You had that Nicole Wallace and all those. There's been a Biden bump. I think people finally caught on to Donald Trump that he's going to be in prison stripes, and they just can't. Okay. And now people thought, no, if you didn't fabricate the bump, it didn't exist. And now we know it didn't exist because people see Joe Biden stumbling through sentences, shaking down wealthy people and blacks and Latinos and poor people for Trump. And then they see Alvin Bragg trying to get Trump on all of these made up misdemeanors. And then they see this rampant crime rate in New York and all these snotty nosed kids breaking in with hammers into Columbia. And he's not going to charge any of them. And they say, you mean Donald Trump signing a non-disclosure is a greater offense to the American public than a guy taking a hammer and destroying the classics department and Hamilton and trying to get in? And they see that guy says, oh, we're going to be out in 24 hours, just like jumping the turnstile. Remember that?
Yeah.
So that, all of that is absorbed and digested by people, and they are outraged by it. And the left, you know, it's sort of like a relative that has a, it's sort of like someone having a relative that had a DUI and caused an accident. And then they think they have to defend that. Or it's like Governor Noem shot the dog. And then she said it was because of fake news that she's getting a bad rap.
Yeah, because the dog was bad.
It's not fake news. I have shot a dog before. I admit that. But the dog had tumors the size of my fist on its neck. And I took it to the vet and I asked them to save it at all cost. And they said, do you want to do it? And I said, well, what would you do if you killed the dog? And they said, we would put it in an ice box. And then we would wait for a person to come by and pick it up. And I said, well, when would that be? We don't know. And I said, well, what would they do? They would burn it up. And then I said, okay. And then I went to another vet. I won't mention names. And the vet says, well, I have a farm and we have a big bulldozer and we just bulldoze them and then we throw them in there. And I thought, I'm not going to do that with this dog. So I waited. I waited too long. I gave it painkillers and it couldn't move its neck, couldn't swallow, it couldn't walk. I carried it up and then I put a towel over it and I put it out of its misery. But then I made my own little dog coffin out of a fruit box, and then I wrapped it in towels, and then I buried it, and because we have coyotes, it was crazy what I did. I went out into an orchard, beautiful spot of the orchard, I still walk over, and I dug down 6 feet, 6 feet in hard, you know, hard dirt with a pick, and I put, Rollo was his name. Although he was kind of a black German shepherd, and I buried him. And then I always kept the name of all the dogs I had that died, and I put his little name on in cement in memoriam.
How sweet.
And I never did that again, though. I never did it again. And I didn't make sure. I think she used a shotgun or something.
Yeah, but it was like a dog that was fighting and biting things and chasing livestock.
I had a little bit of sympathy for her. I thought, because if what she said was true, that it had bitten people and then it killed livestock. But I think her problem was she said it wouldn't mind. Well, all my dogs won't mind.
That's true.
And to tell you the truth, Sport has bitten me 3 times and Spike has bitten me at least 4 times. And deep when they get at it. And I've broken up fights where they've bitten me. But I would never kill them for that. I wouldn't shoot them.
Yeah, but she had young kids. So
yes, that's another thing. But if she just had have said that without saying fake news, because there was a, you know, it's hard to shoot anything. I quit hunting when I was about 14 years old. I shot woodpeckers. I got bounties on rabbits. I shot squirrels. I shot a pregnant possum once by accident. I didn't know it. But I couldn't do that. Rabbits would start shrieking, you know, when you shoot them. And my dad wouldn't let me use a 222 or 243. I had to use a 22. I think it was a Swift or something. But I just couldn't do it anymore. So I quit. I shot every weekend from the age of 7 all the way to 14 to 15, 16. And every once in a while, there's a woodpecker that's destroying the barn and just I'll go out with a shotgun and shoot it. But I always wait till I can't shoot it while it's sitting there. I always let it fly and see if it has a chance to get away.
Yeah.
More so now that I'm getting old and my eyes are bad.
Yeah. Well, Victor, let's go ahead and take a break and then come back and talk about immunity hearings in the Supreme Court. Stay with us and we'll be back.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Well, Victor, the Supreme Court is, I think they're just hearings. It doesn't sound like it's a case to me. It sounds different. And Gorsuch has raised the problem of presidential immunity, and that if they don't have some immunity, they're going to end up with these former presidents being tried all the time. And on the other side of the argument seems to be that, well, absolute immunity would be faulty as well, because they could start participating in assassinations and such. So what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I mean, I think most people understand that you can't give a president or a ex-president absolute immunity in theory, because they could commit murder or something. But I picked that crime in specifically. But if you don't give him immunity of some sort, you're going to have Barack Obama indicted for killing a U.S. citizen, which he did with a Predator drone abroad. So there has to be a balance, and the Supreme Court is trying to find where the balance is. What's missing in the argument is we do have a corrective of presidential behavior. It's called impeachment, and we have a trial in the Senate. Well, we've impeached a lot of presidents. Andrew Johnson, Nixon resigned before he was impeached. We impeached Bill Clinton. We impeached Donald Trump twice. We've never convicted them. But believe me, the court could probably say that if a president was impeached and convicted, that he would be subject to criminal statute while he was in office. So it's very complicated, but the left seems to think that it's only going to matter with Donald Trump. But we've had all sorts of presidents. Bill Clinton lied under oath. All that happened to him, basically paid a fine, and the Arkansas Supreme Court, I think the Arkansas bar, disbarred him. But my point is this: if this doesn't stop, just imagine these scenarios that Hunter Biden wired money to a bank in Utah, right, for one of his many accounts. I'm just being theoretical. Then a local prosecutor, let's say in Provo, indicts Hunter Biden or Joe Biden by extension, or someone says that Joe Biden took a large campaign, his campaign took a large contribution from Alabama millionaire, which was illegal. Barack Obama was fined over $300,000 for that. And then that prosecutor then indicts Joe Biden, says, come down here to Alabama. You can see, you can think up all sorts of scenarios that would be the mirror image of what they're doing. They think they're really riding high because they're trying him in left-wing Atlanta, left-wing Miami, and left-wing New York. But there's a lot of really bright conservative DAs, and they're angry about it. And they can try him in red state Idaho. They can try a left-wing politician in red state Mississippi. They can try them in red state South Carolina. And they're going to do it if they keep up. Yeah. Just like they can take people off the ballot. And the big discussion among the conservative movement is, how low do you go? Because the left has hit rock bottom and they don't listen. So you talk about, I don't know, you talk about indicting Joe Biden at the local and state level. Do you talk about removing his name from the ballot? Do you talk about packing the court when you take the presidency again? Do you talk about automatically impeaching a Democratic president in his first term when he loses the House twice, maybe? Maybe Joe Biden, if Donald Trump wins, and he gets that's what they're saying, the DOJ might come in and indict Biden, unlike Robert Hur. All you have to do is have a lawyer with integrity in the DOJ who looks at the 330-page report by Robert Hur and says this: okay, I don't care about the defendant's empathy or lack of same before a jury. I could care less about whether he's empathetic and bumbling. That's not my job to play a psychiatrist. My job is to see if he broke the law. If he broke the law, I'm going to try the SOB. Excuse the language. I'm very conscious of that. Yeah. But I'm mimicking what somebody would probably say. So they would come in and say, Robert Hur found out that he removed files. That was a felony. And he did it again and again and again. And I'm going to indict him, and I'm going to indict the ghostwriter who deliberately, without a security clearance, looked at those classified files and maybe have even incorporated them into his history, and more importantly, destroyed evidence of that, the tape, when it was under subpoena. It would be very easy to do. And one of the reasons, have you seen what the left is doing now? Nicole Wallace, that nutty person on MSNBC, she says, they're going to probably take me off the air.
Yeah.
They're all saying, if Trump comes in, he's going to fire. I'm thinking, okay, he's going to do what Barack Obama did and Biden, fire everybody. And the thing is, they know what they did to Trump. They know it. They know what they would do if they were Trump and had suffered what they did to Trump. And so what they're doing is they're saying, oh my God, if I did all these illegal, dastardly things to somebody, given who I am, and I got back in power, I would pay those people back. And then they project that onto Donald Trump. And they get paranoid and terrified. It's because they know what they've done.
Yeah. Well, let's turn to some survey that was done on voter fraud. And they were asking questions such that they were just asking people if they had done things before in terms of voting. You know, have you filled out a ballot for somebody else? Have you taken the ballot to hand in place, et cetera. The types of questions like that, just sort of that they sounded innocent, but they were, you know, not, they were voter fraud. So it was by the Heartland Institute and Rasmussen Survey. And here are some of the findings that they got. 21% of voters admitted to filling out a ballot for someone else with or without permission. And they asked several other questions, and they calculated that this voter fraud affected some 13 million ballots in 2020, and Biden only won the popular vote, but won it by 7 million. So the whole article was looking at...
But more importantly, he only won the presidency by 40,000 place votes in swing states. Take 40,000 votes and put them to Trump in places like Georgia or Arizona, Nevada, he would have won the election.
Yeah, I think so.
And so the thing about the left is they always prep the battlefield. So they have established that if you want people to vote, as they do in Europe, in person, with an ID, then you're a racist. And I happen to live in a community where the per capita income is about $16,000. And there is a big warehouse food market, kind of like Costco-like food market, not too long far from me. When I go in there, guess what? There's people right across the border have just come in. They have all sorts of, and guess what? Sometimes the person asks for an ID, and they have some sort of ID. So the idea that you can be asked for an ID to purchase food, but you can't be asked for an ID to vote is ridiculous. And, of course, and I went in the other day, and I was $16,000, and I parked between four cars. One of them was a dual-cab, brand-new Silverado. Those are about $85,000. One was, excuse me, a Tesla. Those are about Model Y, $75,000. And there was a Subaru Forester. Those are about $55,000. And maybe they were leased. But my point is the idea that so-called poor people cannot get to the polls and they can't show an ID is racist and crazy. And they do that for one reason, the left, because they want to make the right feel so scared that they'll be called a racist or illiberal that they can do what they do, and that is transform Election Day into a construct where 30% of the people vote and 70% mail in the ballot, and then they go to town with third-party ballot harvesting, ballot curing, change the legislature, send the ballot in 10 days after the deadline. California, you can't even count the ballots for weeks because you can send it so long after midnight of election night, and they've destroyed the whole idea of election. It used to be a cherished day in America. Culture. Yeah. It's just been destroyed, and they feel that if they're under the radar and it's mail-in balloting and every state agency mails out ballots whether you want them or not, they will end up being packed. And the poor Republicans don't have the resources, and that I guess they didn't catch on to it. There's some really brave people on the conservative. Cleta Mitchell has been demonized, criticized, and yet she still fights back. And what she's trying to do is to warn people on the conservative side, you're going to lose this election unless you take this seriously, what the left is up to. They're insidious. They have all sorts of ways. Mark Zuckerberg, $419 million he infused in the 2020 to absorb the work of the legislature. It's thanks to Cleta and people like her that have warned state legislatures so that some of them have actually passed bills that said no private entity can come in and take over the job of the and put in, you know, mail drop boxes everywhere.
Yes, but in California, the public entities are all controlled by the left and left people, and you know,
it's true. I mean, I remember the head of the DMV just two elections ago. He just kind of shrugged. Oh, I lost 100,000 ballots that were mailed out. Okay. Did anybody get prosecuted? No. Or that I keep going back to that 2012 when there were 30,000 people in Philadelphia precinct that voted for Obama, and there was one that voted for Romney.
There no fraud there.
The only thing that's going to give Trump a chance is not that you can stop the left monstrosity that's so well-funded, but that in these big cities in swing states, and what am I talking about? half the votes in Pennsylvania, more than half, come out of Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, right? And then there's the votes in Tucson and Phoenix. And then there is the votes in Vegas and Reno. And then there is the votes in Cleveland and, you know, Cincinnati. And then there are the votes in Detroit, Lansing. That the people in those cities are predominantly minorities. And if these polls are correct, that 40% to 45% of the Latino vote and maybe 20% of the black vote, then the people who are in government who are going to be more liberal, but nevertheless, there might be a percentage of people who are counting votes in these inner cities where the big votes come in these swing states, then they might just say, you know what, I'm not going to do it anymore. If I see voter fraud, I'm going to report it. But I don't know to what degree that would work when Biden controls the apparatus.
Yeah.
It's the incoming.
Yeah. Well, Victor, let's go ahead and take a break and then come back and talk a little bit about Speaker Johnson and the campus protests from a different angle. Molly Hemingway has an article out saying that they are an extension of the BLM riots. Stay with us and we'll be right back.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Welcome back. You can find Victor at his website, victorhanson.com. The name of the website is The Blade of Perseus. Please come join us there. We have articles that are exclusive to the website. They're called VDH Ultra articles, and you need to subscribe for $5 a month or $50 a year, and we'd like to have everybody on the website if you can join us. So, Victor, Marjorie Taylor Greene, I think we haven't really talked in any depth or really too much about this effort to get rid of Mike Johnson as the Speaker of the House on her part. And I was wondering your reflections on that.
I don't understand that. I don't understand it. They had a seven, when people were well, they had seven seat majority. And then Mr. Gallagher is going to resign, Mr. Buck resigned, Kevin McCarthy resigned, another two resigned, and now you're down to one or two. And the Speaker survives, and you have a majority, and she wants to remove him. And if they remove him, then, and how is he going to stay in there? I mean, the Democrats vote. They're almost half the, so they're getting very, very close where they can put up their own candidate, and all they need is one or two Republicans. And does she understand that? And does she understand that the reaction of the American conservative public would be? Now, I don't like approving budgets, and I wish they had been a little bit tougher that when they gave aid to Ukraine, they also said you had to build a wall or something, but that wasn't going to happen. It wasn't going to be happening because they own the Senate and the White House. And there's 10 or 12 rhinos in the House. So I don't know what the strategy is. And if you look at Speaker Johnson, he was a constitutional lawyer. He was conservative. He went into the heart of darkness, the belly of the beast. He went to Columbia and he spoke on behalf of the Jewish students that Biden didn't do. And he doesn't have any margin of error. So why would you destroy your own speaker after you've destroyed one already? It's just, all it does is transmit the idea that these people are amateurs. They have no discipline. They have no solidarity. And the Democrats say, look at us. We don't let one person defect. We even get the crazy squad. So it's bad all the way around. They should keep him.
Yeah, don't they see it as the Marjorie Taylor Greene and what is that guy's name?
Matthew Gaetz.
Yeah, they see it as being loyal to their constituencies, though, right? I mean,
they do. I understand what they're saying. They're saying that we were elected for physical sobriety, and Speaker Johnson greenlighted a massively big deficit spending of $2 trillion. We said that we did not want to be involved in overseas military adventurism when we can't protect our own border. I understand that. But they should know that if Speaker Johnson had a 10-seat firm 20-seat majority, then he would probably be for that. And if this wasn't an election year where the left wants the right to shut down the government so they can show that it's dysfunctional and Biden can win, he would do that. But what he's saying is, I want to get the Senate and I want to get a bigger margin in the House and I want to get the presidency. And I'm willing not to sacrifice this margin error yet. And they should understand that.
Yeah.
Because their constituents, I just don't believe the constituents in Florida want to hand over the House to the Democrats. I just don't think they do. After that hard-fought midterm, I don't think the people in Georgia want to do it either.
Yeah.
So I have nothing against either one of them. I like them. They're nice people, it seems to me. I met Marjorie Taylor Greene once. She was very pleasant. But I just don't think that removing the Speaker. And he's in an impossible situation now because he's only going to survive if Democrats vote for him. And when they praise him, then his brand is tarnished.
Yeah.
And so, but given where they were, they could have also, that Republican caucus has got a lot of crazy people in it. And when he's on camera, he is very precise in his language. He's well-spoken. He's clearly conservative. And he's unafraid. And those are good qualities in a speaker.
Yeah.
I just don't understand why. I think Trump is behind him, too.
Didn't he recently go in among those protesters?
He did. He went to Columbia. He didn't have to.
No, he didn't.
And he spoke up for the Jewish students. That's more than Chuck Schumer did, didn't he?
Yeah.
Why didn't Chuck Schumer say to Speaker Johnson, hey, we're on one area of agreement. There's rampant anti-Semitism. And it's the locus classicus, the heart of darkness of this dark epidemic of anti-Semitism is at Columbia. And it's at Hamilton Hall. I want you to come with me, and both of us will. He didn't do that. And Johnson did. And he knew what the reaction was going to be. And he knew what the reaction was going to be to his basic thing on Ukraine was, we don't want a big war with Russia. We don't want Ukraine doing one of these suicidal invasions like they did in the spring offensive, where they lost probably 50,000 casualties butting up against this 600-mile fortification. We don't want them sending missiles into the Kremlin that might prompt nuclear war. But on the other hand, we don't want Ukraine to be overrun and see thousands of people are going to be executed or exiled, number one. And number two, we don't want to be the party who said that the left says, oh, you lost Ukraine. And you know, the left is very funny. We can scamper outside of Afghanistan and flee. We can leave a $1 billion embassy. We can leave a $300 million refitted Air Force base. We can leave 13 American dead Marines that had rules of engagement the Marine Corps did that didn't allow them to protect themselves adequately. We can blow up a car of innocent civilians and call it righteous. And then, as I said, $50 billion of munitions. And nobody says the Democrats lost Afghanistan. That was the greatest disaster. But you get out of Ukraine and that thing collapses because you cut off aid to it, they'll really go after it. I'm not speaking as a big, I'm not enthralled by Zelensky. I remember Zelensky before the invasion was talking about negotiating with Putin about the status of the Donbass and Crimea. And if you go back and look at the press, and I have, the reported context of that was he was searching a deal where these Russian majority areas, 70% speaking Russian, could be absorbed by Russia in exchange for a peace treaty in which he did not join NATO and Russia gave up all territorial claims on anything other than these disputed areas. And then now it's on to Moscow.
Yeah. Well, Victor, have you read Molly Hemingway's article on
I think it was mostly a transcript.
Oh, okay.
And maybe we have a different one, but she was on Fox.
Oh, okay.
And she
yes.
gave an extended interview. But I don't know if she's actually put that into... She probably has, but I read the transcript. I think it was on Real Clear Politics.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So she thinks that the protests are an extension of the BLM riots. And I was wondering your thoughts.
Well, she's right, because those protesters, as we quoted earlier in an earlier podcast, when the guy said, well, are you afraid of getting arrested? No, we'll be out in 24 hours. So they understand that after the death of George Floyd and the ascension of the Soros prosecutors, there are no consequences in blue states and big cities. That's what we're talking about. And they look at two types of civil unrest. They see January 6th. Even Al Sharpton said this was like January 6th. And they see that if you went into a broken window on January 6th, they shot you lethally, unarmed. And nothing happened to the police officer. They know that they would never, and God forbid, it shouldn't, but they know that'll never happen at Columbia. They know that 120 days, there was 35 people killed. There was the Chaz zone, and it just took over large swaths of the downtown. They tried to burn down a federal courthouse. They torched a police precinct. They tried to get at Trump and swarm the White House grounds. They torched the iconic St. John's Episcopal Church in Washington. They had 1,500 arrests. They destroyed $2 billion in property, and there were no consequences. Almost all of those 14,000, except a couple of arsonists, were let go. And they looked at the January 6th, and these people were charged with illegal parading. And they took facial recognition for months. They went through all the social media accounts of these people. They did everything they could. They put them in solitary confinement, some of them, for a year without charges. So these protesters look at that and they say, now, why was that? Well, it's because these are right-wing people that in a left-wing city, they went after them, right? And the federal government was run by Biden. And somebody said, no, Victor, they tried to overthrow the government. Well, just a minute. What do you think they were doing when Kamala Harris said, this isn't going to stop. This is going to go on all the way to election day. She said that. And then the fact checkers, these corrupt fact checking polifacts, well, she wasn't talking about violent. No, she was talking about protesters in the context that they were violent. And what does she think? What does she think Molly Ball in her Time February 2021 essay was about when she said, this was a cabal? Her words, not mine. This was a conspiracy in which people who organized the protest were coordinating the warp and the whip. They were trying to say, she was writing in that article, that they were modulating the street scene on the calibration of whether it helped or hurt Biden. And that's what this whole thing was about. It was the COVID lockdown, the whole destruction of the Trump economy, and 120 days of riot mayhem with complete impunity was to do two things, to empower the rioters to go at it, and two, to show the nation that Donald Trump couldn't stop it. And when he wanted to stop it and send National Guards, they called him a fascist. Our defense secretary resigned over it. Okay. And all the retired officers came out and called him Mussolini and Auschwitz, all that crap. And so what Molly is saying is that they look at those two scenes and they see one paradigm and they see another. And the one paradigm is if you're left wing, you get exempt. And if you're right wing, you don't. and we're not right wing, so we're not going to be exempt. But if some Jewish students come in, as they did at UCLA, and they weren't even students, and they try to stop what we're doing, they'll probably go to jail. And that's what empowers them.
Yeah.
And that was the precedent that's set.
Yeah.
I hope, I don't know what the statute of limitations are. I hope when the DOJ is back in sane hands, somebody goes back and looks at 2020 and says this was a racketeering effort across state lines by Antifa and BLM to cause a conspiracy to destroy property and kill people and attack 1,500 police officers. And to the degree there's a statute of limitations, and I think it's 5 years for most states for felonies, we're going to prosecute them. And that would stop it.
Yeah.
But there's no deterrence, and they know that. And that was her point in the article.
Yeah. Did you notice that, did you see that when the police came in Columbia and they went into the hall, they had that ramp that went up and sent there. Did you notice that the officers that were at the front of the line were all these really big guys? And so they put all the big guys in first, and then about three or four women came in at the very end of that line of about 20 different officers. And I was like,
the only reason I noticed was the women were like acrobats when they went up the ladder.
Yeah,
they were like balancing, and they were very delicate, like deer, like prancing in.
Yeah.
And the guys were really huge, and they were not clumsy, but they could hardly fit in the window.
But they were in clumsy equipment.
And then they switched positions.
Yeah.
They went in as the, you're not supposed to notice that. It was pretty good what they did.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I don't understand it. I watched the UCLA tapes and I watched the Columbia. There were people throwing buckets of water on the police. They were hitting them. They were throwing bottles at them. All those pictures were there.
That's assault of a policeman.
That's what they did to January 6th. If they pushed a policeman.
Yeah.
They pushed a policeman. Remember they said that the Democratic Party, Joe Biden, said five police officers were killed. And they said, no, they weren't. Officer Sicknick was the only one that died. But we're going to count suicide months later, a year later, because they were assaulted and there was so much stress they killed themselves. Well, if you can make that argument, what is it when they're just hitting them right in your face in the here and now? They didn't do anything to them. It's something, and what's worse about the whole thing was it was so infused with class, class, class. Here were these spoiled cry bullies that parents can fork out $80,000 to $90,000 for room, board, and tuition, and they all act like they're Marxists. But when you listen to them, when they interview them, they're saying, as a Columbia student, as a Columbia person, we're Columbia student. They're so arrogant and snobbish. And they've been raised that way to think they're entitled, whether in the Middle East or here. And then they look at these policemen, and these guys are all from Staten Island, the Bronx, or Brooklyn, or Long Island. They have that New York accent, and they just treat them with contempt, whether they're black or Puerto Rican or Latino or white. And it's really, how dare you do that? Shame on you. You're a fascist.
And it's kind of the difference, the preppies versus the townies. Isn't that what they used to call it, between the private school kids and the townies? I bet there's a little bit of hostility there of that order.
I was at UC Santa Cruz.
As well,
what made me
be
sick about UC Santa Cruz? I mean, I had great teachers in classics, but pretty much the students were disgusting. No, they were. You know why? Is that they, during the Cambodia invasion, I think that was 72 or 3, the bombing, they had a protest. And I went outside my, it was in 71 there was a protest. And I went outside my dorm, right? And here, it was 72, excuse me, I was in the dorm. And all these people were marching, right? Down to the Santa Cruz courthouse to have a petition that the Board of Supervisors, I don't know, there was some defense contractor up on Empire Gray, they wanted to stop it, and I was just watching them. So I went out and I paralleled them, right? In other words, they were marching and they took over both lanes down the hill, and I would walk on the sidewalk next to them. I just wanted to see what they were like. And they were the most entitled, disgusting people. Fuck them, you please, pig, you know what I mean? To these Santa Cruz campus cops and city cops that were coming up. And then the cops, I would listen to them talking, and they were like, this is a zoo. What are they doing? And then they got near the pasture, and they said, free the cows, and they let these cows out that could be killed on the road. And I thought, these are the most spoiled. They were all from Los Angeles, San Francisco, suburbs. They were entitled. They thought, this is the new Stanford. This is UC Santa Cruz. It's brand new. There's no grades. This, you have to be really smart like me to get in. That was their attitude. Of course, that collapsed within 3 years. But they were the most repulsive, entitled, spoiled people in the world. And I see every once in a while, I get the Banana Slug alumni report, and I look at these names, and I connect them with faces. And you know what? They're all in the entertainment industry. They're in media. They're in law. They're in Wall Street. They're all wealthy. All wealthy. Mm. And that was all a fraud. It was all a rite of passage. And they did so much damage to the university and to the community and to the university brand. And then I would say to all the faculty, because I knew some of the faculty in classics, I'd say, why don't they arrest those people? Well, you can't arrest them. They're against the war. It was like, okay, you know, it's, I guess if you were this was a fascist country and you said you're for the war, you can't be arrested. They're breaking the law.
Yeah.
They should go read, you know, Socrates' Euthyphro and Crito about the hoi nomoi, the laws. Socrates says, if you try to break me out of prison, I'd like to live, but you're breaking the law. And if you break the law, then everybody can break the law. And the laws, they actually become animated, remember, in the dialogue, and they speak. It's really wonderful dialogue.
Well, Victor, we're at the end of our show now, and I have a question from a fan from the Apple Podcasts. He says, I'm curious as to your take and or explanation about the instance about 8 or so years ago where Trump was accused of mocking a disabled reporter. My checking says it was misconstrued, but I'm curious to hear VDH's take. Drew Knowles.
I took that very seriously because my granddaughter has a genetic condition called Smith-Magenis. And in some ways, it's missing two genes and she's in special needs. She has a host of physical problems, but also she's, you know, IQ challenged. And my daughter takes care of her. So when that happened, my daughter got very, very angry because he did these motions, you know, and people thought that he was addressing this person who asked this reporter who had that condition of involuntary muscle spasm. I don't know whether that was true or not, but I do know this, that people who defended him showed in maybe 3 or 4 instances, and I know that listeners can correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm doing this by memory. I didn't know you were going to ask that question, but there were times when he kind of gesticulated, Trump did,
yeah,
without reference to somebody who was disabled.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure, and I don't think that he knew that particular reporter was disabled. So I think it's something along the lines where he's in a room with 20 people at D-Day, and it's very foggy and moist, and the helicopters do not want to take off in the fog. And one person comes out and says, Trump says that everybody was suckers who died on Omaha Beach. Of course, I have members of my family who've lectured me about that. But it didn't. I don't think that happened either, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I have this one I like.
It's like, can I just interrupt one last time? It's like the both sides thing. Trump praised the Klan. No, he didn't. You go read the transcript. He said, there are bad people, there are good people on both sides. And what he meant was on the left, there were people who were opposed, who were opposed to racism and came out there in support of the, I suppose, or the purported racism in those particular marches. But there was also Antifa there who were trying to take advantage of it and destroy statues and topple. On the other side, there were people who were conservative Southerners who felt that they did not want to tear down statues that were not done legally and nocturnally. They didn't want people at night defacing and destroying monuments. But they were taken over by white supremacists. So Trump said, There were good people on both sides. And I'm not talking about the white supremacists. He said that, and they cut all of that out.
Yeah, I know. It was a disaster. I like this one. I like mostly the name associated with it. Very short and curt. Loved Miranda Devine interview. Looking forward to the next one. And this is signed by Fuji Apple Girl 101.
Now, that's very interesting because... We do a lot of interviews. I've done two senatorial candidates, and we just did Jeremy Carl. And they all have good reception, but that thing went viral. It was like 100,000 already downloads. And it has something to do with Miranda Devine.
It does. She's great.
You know what it is? I think I was listening to an interviewing her. She has this calm veneer, and then she pulls out a stiletto. Yeah. And she goes after her target. She never loses her temper. She never raises her voice. And she just says the most interesting, unique takes on things. Like when she started talking about Hunter Biden, she just matter-of-factly, if you remember, she says something like, and he never takes any responsibility for the terrible parenting. Of course, that's exactly true, but no one ever says that.
No.
So she can say things that are accurate because she's very well-spoken.
Yeah.
She's very analytical, and she's calm.
Yeah.
And she's attractive, nice and person, and I really had fun interviewing her. She's really something. She's really an asset to the conservative cause and journalism in particular. And the left just can't not take her because she's smarter than they are and she's more analytical than they are. And she doesn't get mad.
No.
And she's very fair with Trump. She wants Trump to win, but she's not going to say that he's not crude at times. So she's very honest. And there are people like that in the conservative movement that are really valuable. You know who else has that ability is Molly Hemingway.
Yeah, she's really
I used to watch her exchanges with Brett Baer when Jonah Goldberg was transitioning to Never Trump, and he was really angry at her. And she was sort of, well, she was so matter-of-fact. She was very well-informed. She had such a pleasant personality. She has a good TV presence, and that drives people crazy. And she drives them crazy because the more she's calm and deliberative, the more conservative she can sound, and she doesn't rant and rave, you know. So she's another asset as well.
Yeah. Well, Victor,
there's a lot of assets on the conservative side that we should appreciate.
Yeah, we're at the end of our podcast, so
I should
thanks.
Say, and another one is Cleta Mitchell, the voter rights. She's got the same iron spine, and yet it's got a veneer of, not a false veneer, but it's packaged in a very sweet manner. Nice.
Yeah. We're at the end of our podcast today, and I would like to thank our listeners and thank you as well.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. Much enjoyed it.
This is Sammy Wink and Victor Davis Hanson, and we're signing off.